Russ, this is our first opportunity in a couple of weeks to actually talk movies. We'd like to take this opportunity over the past 2 weeks to all the WEMU contributors who made our pledge drive as successful as it was.
Yes, WEMU would not be successful without the listener support that's out there, and we especially thank Cinema Chat listeners. I think they were some of the most generous, and we really, really appreciate their support.
We are most grateful, and simply put, we couldn't do it without you. So thank you very much, and we'll do that all again in the spring. We'll have a lot of fun. We'll raise some money, and that's kind of the way it goes. But between now and then, a lot of uninterrupted Cinema Chat.
That's right. Well, just a lot of uninterrupted great news from WEMU's news team, something I look forward to every morning. So, not opening this week in our neck of the woods, but already opened in the UK is the latest James Bond film.
Yeah, I understand the royal family attended the opening.
That's right.
It must be a big deal.
Well, they have made a tradition of this, at least for most of the Bond films, and it did open with a red carpet affair at Leicester Square at the Odeon Theater there, and the reviews are very, very strong, so we can look forward to that. It opens in mid-November here
it's
in the States.
It's called Skyfall, right?
Skyfall, yes it is. And it's
supposed to be the best Bond movie in a while.
Again, the reviews are strong, so if you're a Bond fan, you could
get something. Lots of big blow-em-up stuff.
Very, very exciting to look forward to. And Andrew Serres, who we all owe a debt of gratitude to, he's a critic.
I was unaware that I was in debt.
Yeah, he's a critic, and he and Pauline Kael were a generation of film critics that came to their own in the 60s and 70s. But he was someone that was a strong advocate for what's called the auteur theory, which attaches the director most strongly as the primary artistic force in a movie.
Well, we kind of accept that notion as a standard today, don't we?
That's absolutely correct. So when you talk about a film, frequently it's the director that's talked about, and it's his film more than it's the screenwriter. So in theater, typically the person that does the script is the one that's associated. So it's a Shakespeare play or it's a Chekhov play.
Tennessee Williams play, right.
Yeah, exactly. Neil Simon. But in film, it tends to be the director. And that was something that was discussed for a long, 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 long time. But Andrew Serres was a very articulate kind of writer about film. And he reviewed film and very close
to. Was he associated with a particular publication?
He was, Village Voice.
Village Voice, okay.
And then he wrote for a lot of New York publications after that.
And I'm sure he was picked up on a syndicated level.
He reviewed films until about a year ago, and he died this June, and there was a big gathering of film aficionados and filmmakers in New York last week to pay tribute to Andrew Serres. So if you've taken a film class or two, you may have heard of Andrew Serres. If you've read film criticism over the last 50, 60 years, you've read Andrew Serres. And anyway, we're thinking of you, Andrew, and thanking
job
you
well
for
done.
What you did. Well, opening this week at the multiplexes is a wild, wide-ranging film that we actually previewed yesterday at the Michigan Theater called Cloud Atlas.
It's got Tom Hanks in it.
It's got Tom
Count
Hanks and Halle Berry and Jim Broadbent.
You just doubled my pleasure.
And it's put together by the Wachowski brothers and Tom Tykwer. And it's a film that literally ranges across hundreds and hundreds of years in the future, in the past. It's characters who reappear. All of the characters, Halle Berry character, Tom Hanks character, Jim Broadbent, all appear in a whole bunch of these stories that are set in some kind of vague future time that but it feels almost prehistoric, tribal in the way that it plays out. It plays out in 18th century England. It plays out in San Francisco in the 1970s. It plays out in Seoul in the future, about 200 years in the future.
But there's a thread that ties all of these periods together.
Well, and the threads are that this film postulates that we live many lives and that those lives are entwined and affect one another. And it's kind of interesting on that way.
How one simple act in a moment of time can span generations.
Or how all of these things are woven together in a very complex and not linear.
It's
at
a thinking
all.
Person's film.
It is a thinking person's film.
I like that.
David Edelstein from the New York Magazine wasn't so complimentary. He said the cast comes off like a third-rate stock company on a matinee after a night that everyone got bombed. Now, Variety says it's an intense 3-hour mental workout rewarded with a big emotional payoff, and it does work that way. And the reviews are kind of split 50-50 in terms of whether folks do think that it's this sprawling, amazing work or whether folks think that it's very, very ambitious but just doesn't hold together. So you're going to have to go and make your own decision about Cloud Atlas based on a famous novel. And it premiered at the Toronto Film Festival and got a lot of buzz. So that's something to recommend it. So Cloud Atlas opens at your local multiplex. Chasing Mavericks is a young man's quest to surf Northern California's most dangerous waves. There's no internet reviews on this particular
film. It's got Gerard Butler in it, right?
It does. And it's the true story of surfing icon Jay Moriarty.
Yeah, he talks about how he in real life nearly died trying to film this movie because it got pinned under by a wave for nearly a full minute, and you know when panic sets in, holding your breath becomes more difficult.
That's right, and that is a real experience if you've ever been surfing. So, Fun Size is the thriller that's coming out, and of course it's Halloween, so you would expect that, and it's about a sarcastic high school senior who's eager to distance herself from her dysfunctional family by going off to college, and she comes back home and trick-or-treaters are there and all kinds of bad things happen.
It's kind of a tweener movie, right?
It is a tweener movie, and the reviews are not very strong on that one, but I don't think
it'll hit with its core audience
for very strong. Opening Downtown is a fascinating film that's a hybrid between a thriller and a documentary, believe it or not, and it's about this 13-year-old Texas boy who disappeared without a trace. His family doesn't know what happened to him. He just disappeared. And 3 years later, he turns up, or they think he turns up, in Spain. And he comes back to his family, except
he's not quite right.
When he left, he was a blonde, and he was an American kid. And when he came back, he had this Spanish accent that he couldn't quite get rid of, and he had dark hair and darker skin, but the family embraced him, and it is literally this thriller that the critics are going crazy for. 93% positive reviews. Kenneth Turan.
It'll be interesting to see if he is or if he isn't.
I don't think they answered the question. But this is a train wreck you think you're coming to see, but no matter how prepared you are, the nature and extent of the damage will overwhelm you. He was just fascinated by Oren Gleiberman said the same thing. It's a true story, and that is oh so wow. Unbelievable, so deeply compelling, stranger than fiction, that you don't so much watch it as get addicted to it. The Rolling Stone liked it. New York Times liked it. The imposter is a slippery, manipulative, unstable, smoothly confounding. It's also one of the most entertaining documentaries to appear since Exit Through the Gift Shop, a film similarly obsessed with role-playing and deception. So The Imposter opens up again to very strong positive reviews. It combines fictional footage, restaged footage, with actual interviews with the family, and it is a fascinating piece.
So far, this one sounds like the most entertaining of all
and
that we've done.
It certainly is the best reviewed, and it opens at the Michigan Theater on Friday. Tonight, you can go see Nosferatu, which was the first vampire movie, the first monster movie, 1922.
Still the scariest-looking Dracula of all.
He is a scary-looking Dracula, for sure. And it's going to be presented with live musical accompaniment by our wonderful organist, Stephen Ball. And this film, I'm not going to tell you that you're going to be dazzled by the special effects, because what they could do in 1922 wasn't the same as digital special effects.
But if you put it in context of the era, it's rather amazing.
It is. It's totally amazing. And the guy that plays Dracula is extremely creepy. Makeup, deportment, even the use of the limited special effects that they have.
To this day, I'm very suspicious of people with long fingers.
That's right. Well, his fingernails are scary. The Rocky Horror Picture Show is going to be on this weekend at the State Theater, October 26th and 27th, late at night. The National Theater of Great Britain is going to do a production called Last of the Housemans, and that's going to be on Sunday at 7 o'clock. Motor City Movies continue with Gran Torino.
Great movie.
Absolutely, starring Clint Eastwood and a chair, on October 29th, which is Monday at 7 o'clock.
Lots to choose from. Go see the movies, and we'll talk again next week. For Russ Collins, I'm David Fair, and we thank you for joining us for another installment of Cinema Chat, and we once again thank you for contributing during our pledge drive, and we'll look forward to another 6 months of uninterrupted programming thanks to your generous support.
Ta-ta, and thank you right here from the WEMU studios.